Hi there, I'm Nick Allgaier with the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're listening to The Walk Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan. Wire.
And another one, my goodness.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you? How was your weekend?
It was good, man. Starting to see some baseball weather out this way in Alberta. Yeah, nice. It was like 17 above yesterday. Yeah. It was crazy here in Calgary.
It's crazy. It's pothole season, too.
Right, isn't it? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Is it ever.
I'll tell you this quick story before we get into ball. I was heading to Bed Bath & Beyond with my wife on Saturday, and she was driving. Not that that's important detail, but might be important to some people. I don't know. And anyways, hit a pothole. Two flat tires instantly.
Two flat tires?
Yeah. So hit them with both, you know, because one's right behind the other. And so we pulled into this Walmart parking lot, called AAA or whatever to come get a tow. And tow truck's going to be about an hour. So we head into Walmart, whatever, kill some time. So we're waiting in the car. Tow truck calls. It's about 15 minutes out. And it just, the thought pops in my head, like, if a little baby tow truck comes, I don't know how they're going to tow us to the dealership or whatever if both flat tires are on the same side, right?
Right.
So my wife's on the phone and she says, oh, my husband says, you know, I hope you're bringing like a flatbed tow truck. And tow truck driver's like, no, it'll be fine, like, whatever. So tow truck driver gets there and he's like, no, we'll swap one of the tires, put a spare tire on, so it'll be fine. So we spent about 20 minutes. This guy's just really struggling trying to get the spare tire on. And I'm just
trying, like, to be hands off, right?
Trying to be hands off. I mean, I've worked in trades. I hate it when the homeowner's there watch, you know, oh, can I hold the flashlight while you service this? It's just like, just let me struggle. It'll get done. I won't break anything. So I get it, right? So I'm trying to, like, not crowd this guy while he's working on it. But he's having just a bear of a time trying to get the one tire off to. So I hear him whacking our tire with this wooden block. And I come around. I'm like, did you lift it up high enough? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. And then he goes to, like, put his hand under the tire. He's like, oh, maybe I could lift it a little bit more. So that's why he couldn't get it off.
Right, comes right off as soon as he gets it higher. Of course, right?
So I'm like, oh man, this guy knows what he's doing. I'm in good hands here.
And, right.
Anyway, so the spare tire gets put on, and next thing you know, he's, you know, got the tow truck under the one end and he's lifting it up, and then he pulls out this weird thing that I've never seen before, but I guess it's pretty common. It's like a little mini axle with like four tires, like two on each side, and he propped that under the other end of the car, so all four wheels of my car were off the ground anyways, because he had this weird, I'll put a picture of it in Discord, but I was like,
so he didn't even need to change that back tire.
Exactly. I'm like, why did we just spend the last half hour? So anyways, we got to the dealership and it was fine. I mean, we kind of just kicked the problem down the road a bit. But we put the summer tires on.
Right.
Just took the winters off, you know, with the nice weather we're having. So I'm sure I've jinxed it, and we're going
to
get a
nice big dump of snow. Oh, you're really tempting the weather gods here. Way to go, bud. So
anybody that sees a big dump of snow, he can blame me.
I haven't even heard of two flat tires back-to-back like that. That's not very good luck.
I mean, when you hit a pothole going highway speed.
Yeah. You're like, you're going to pop them up. You did the science on it. It's going to happen.
So, anyways, that was my weekend. That was fun.
Well, there you go. Welcome to the walk-off, everybody.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us here. Time. We're excited today. I know we spent some time yesterday, last episode I should say, kind of shining a light on the women of baseball, and we are in the middle of Women's History Month, so we figured that it was appropriate to have a female guest today. Stephanie Ellis, the general manager or assistant general manager, I should say, with the Vancouver Canadiens, the High A affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays, was going to join us. We had a wonderful talk with her.
Amazing.
It was awesome. She had all sorts of great things to tell us about the Canadiens, her rise up the front office there, her hopes and dreams of maybe even being involved in a Major League Baseball front office, and her time in NCAA. All of that is not available right now.
That's my bad. So we had some technical difficulties. Basically, yeah. I forgot to end the recording, and then my computer ran out of memory, you know, 15 gigabytes later, and the file's corrupt. So
by the way, if there are any computer nerds out there who just heard that problem and have for some reason forgotten themselves to stop recording and have a massive file that's now corrupted and won't open, and you know the solution to this, please reach out. That would be incredible if somebody could help us recover this interview. If not, yeah, Stephanie will come back on. She was a lovely, lovely lady with some really fun baseball stuff to say. So we may just need to kick that down the road.
You realize you've just opened the door for a flood of comments that just say, have you tried restarting it?
Yeah, yeah. Jiggle the cable, guys.
Jiggle the cable. Kick it.
So instead, we are going to continue with our spring training extravaganza, highlighting Blue Jays prospects. We've got Nick Allgaier's interview running in probably 25 to 30 minutes here. Missouri boy, super exciting stuff. Big lefty. Looks like he's probably going to start the year in Double A. We'll see. Missouri boy, so he's a huge hockey fan. Surprised me too. We actually had quite a good hockey talk with him. Diehard St. Louis Blues fan. So we kind of hear about how happy he was in 2019 with that cup win, where he was, what he was doing watching it. He was actually watching it on the bus. So we'll throw to that shortly here. We've also got a couple more Blue Jays prospects coming up this weekend, or I should say this week. Tomorrow we talk to Semro Burs. He's from the Netherlands, and the Jays actually took him last year in the international draft. Really excited to talk to this kid. He's a 19-year-old pitcher. The Jays are really high on him. We're not sure where he's going to start. Probably low A Dunedin this year. But we'll ask him what he figures their plan is for him. We'll get into, I'm just excited in all honesty to talk to him about what it was like coming up in a non-traditional baseball atmosphere. You know, like the Netherlands deals with a lot of the same problems Canadians do when it comes to baseball, you know, shorter season, you got to deal with winter, you don't have as much field time. So we'll talk to him about that and what it's going to be like for him to, you know, be a fish out of water coming over here to North America. So that's kind of cool. And then we also talk tomorrow to Chris Beck. He is a catcher in the minor league system and who was actually called up to big league camp just a few weeks ago. So we'll talk to him about what it was like going in kind of halfway through, you know, everyone's kind of already got the rhythm down of spring training and then he shows up, but excited to talk to him. And then Josh Palacio, probably Friday, we're going to talk to him. Yeah. So that's very cool. All right, let's get into it, buddy. Spring training, we're 2 weeks away from opening day. I'm getting pretty excited, man, and we're actually at the point now where we're going to start being able to see some Blue Jays spring training games on the television. Right. I know I've complained about this literally every single episode, so I won't dwell on it too much, although it is ridiculous that Rogers doesn't air their own product, but we don't need to harp on it. Today at 11, we get to watch the Tigers and the Jays, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Ryu pitching?
Ryu is pitching.
So
probably see him go four innings this time. They're starting to get to the point where they're stretched out to four or five innings. So,
hey, friends, thanks so much for watching this far into our boring new show today. We recently hit 300 subscribers on YouTube, which is amazing. Thank you all so much. Some of you have asked us to start a Patreon, and we will, but we aren't going to be locking any of this content that you've come to enjoy behind a paywall. So don't worry about that. The news show, all the interviews in their entirety, past interviews, every interview that we do into the future, all 100% for free to everybody on YouTube. So don't worry about that. What we will be doing, though, is soon we're going to be live streaming our new interviews. And our Patreons, when we get that up and running, we'll be able to watch live and suggest questions in the live chat, which is going to be really cool. We're also going to be running some contests for stuff like autographed baseballs from some of the guests we've had on the show, stuff like that. An entry to those draws will be like a free throw-in for our Patreons as well. We have a few other exciting things that we aren't quite ready to announce yet, but we will be managing all of our Patreon stuff through our Discord. And as a thank you to all of those who have been an early supporter of the show, which, I mean, if you've watched this far into a boring news show, clearly you're the person I'm talking to. But we want to give you a free lifetime access to all of those premium features. That's why we just kind of are hiding this advertisement, this clip, in the middle of a news episode. So if you're actually seeing this ad, you're the exact kind of viewer that we want to thank and reward with this awesome free perk. So hidden down below in the show notes, there'll be a clickable link, whether you're on YouTube or listening along in the podcast. There'll be a link, which is you just click on it and it's an invite to our Discord. Discord's free, but you have to have that invite link. So please click on that, join our Discord. We'd like to get a nice little community going there where Scott and I can chat with you guys. We share news articles, even just stupid memes, whatever. We listen to your feedback. If you guys have suggestions for, you know, the kind of content you want to see on the YouTube channel, Discord would be the place to let us know. We also take submissions for Q&A for upcoming guests there. We'll be announcing any exciting guests that we have coming up in our Discord ahead of time. And that Discord is where we're going to be running all of our contests for like the autographed baseballs, sharing the secret links for our upcoming live streams of the interviews. So you'll be able to see in Discord an invite to the live stream when it's happening. And then you'll be able to watch on YouTube live in real time, submit your questions in the chat, everything like that. No guarantee we're going to get to all your questions, but it's going to be a lot of fun that way. So please, thank you for not skipping through this ad. Go ahead and click that link, because after opening day, April 1st, any new invitations to join our Discord will become a premium perk for our Patreon. So click the link, join now for free, enjoy lifetime access for free, and that's just a special thank you from us for being an early supporter of the show. Thanks again so much. Let's get back to the show.
I know it's funny because we both feel the same way about spring training for the most part, that the numbers don't matter that much. A lot of the positions that are already locked in, it's just about getting the guys in game playing shape.
Staying healthy.
However, this year there are a few positions where guys are fighting it out, right? We're going to see the starting rotation develop as it gets closer to opening day. Mm-hmm. There are a few spots there that are question marks, but the big one is the backup catcher position. And it's funny because when the spring training started, I really think that that position was Reese McGuire's to lose. Mm-hmm. I think that in the Jays management, in their minds, they were like, Alondro Kirk, yes, he lit the fall on fire last mm-hmm. year. He was incredible with his bat, kept up with big league pitching. However, had a little bit more seasoning to go on the defensive end of the ball, mm-hmm. on running a pitching staff, mm-hmm. on all the stuff that goes along with being a professional catcher.
Right.
Now that we're 2 weeks out, I can't see Kirk not getting that position. I don't know what they're going to do with Reese McGuire because he is out of options, so they can't send him down without DFA in him, which means that he'll be available on the waiver wire to anyone who would like to pick him up, and someone will. Mm-hmm. So that's the truth. Someone will pick Reese McGuire up if this is the route the Jays decide to go. Mm-hmm. But man, Kirk is hitting .500 right now. Every time they put him in, he smokes it, and I know it's spring training, but buddy, I don't understand how you can do anything but just give him the job at this point. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yes,
like developmentally,
no,
I mean, like developmentally, what do you think's best? Like, I kind of feel like maybe you let him run with it.
yes and no. I don't think if you send him down to AAA for a month to start the season, I don't think it's going to hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to do any damage to Kirk, right? Now, he already played last year, so like the whole service time, don't call him up till whatever day.
The service time is irrelevant,
right? Yeah. I just think with Reese McGuire, like you said, he's out of options, so we're not going to carry three catchers.
No.
If we send him down, he's going to get claimed. I just think in terms of asset management, we're going to put Kirk on AAA, and we're going to try and get whatever we can in trade for Reese McGuire. And I don't think we'll get much.
Try and move him.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, why
What's
wouldn't
the downside to just putting Kirk in AAA for a month and just putting it out there? Hey, we got a young, good, you know,
relatively left-handed back catcher. Yep.
Like, there is stuff to be attracted to about Reese McGuire.
It's why he's still on the team. Yeah,
he's not particularly my type, but there's people
His rope is definitely shorter at this point.
Yep.
And I mean, we are talking about the backup catching role. Mm-hmm. I do think that later on in the season, we're going to see a lot of Kirk, especially if Danny Jansen's back continues to be a problem.
For sure.
But I'm with you. I don't think there's necessarily a need to rush this kid. Mm-hmm. He's sort of forcing the Jays' hand. Mm-hmm. I can't see them not giving him the position if he continues to rake like this at the plate.
Of course.
Like, if he literally ends spring training hitting 400 or 500, it's... You almost wish to reward the kid at that point, right? Mm-hmm. For being that prepared coming into spring training. He lost 20 pounds. He looks great. He's put in a ton of effort on the defensive end of things. Yeah, it'll be interesting because that really is one of the only positions that is a question mark at this point on this team. Other than the back end of the rotation and some bullpen spots.
Right.
Yeah.
The closer. What do you think? Is Yates the guy? Or...
I think Yates is the guy. Here's the thing. It's funny. I was watching Charlie Montoya, a press conference. It must have been a day ago, 2 days ago, when he was talking about Jordan Romano, the Markham madman, right? Mm-hmm. Canadian boy. And his confidence in Romano is actually incredibly impressive at this point. Like, Charlie said he's got 10 out of 10 confidence in this kid late in the game. Mm-hmm. They were using him to close games last year. I think he's going to get lots of save opportunities. I think it's going to be a bullpen by committee, and it's going to be situation by situation. I don't think there's going to be as many defined roles as maybe there were a few years ago.
Right.
But yeah, I think Yates is going to be the guy until... It's going to be the hot hand too, I think. You know, like if Yates struggles for a bit, like, again, everyone needs to remember Kirby Yates is a superstar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He was one of the best closers in baseball in 2019. He's coming off an injury-plagued season. Mm-hmm. He's coming, you know, like, that's the thing, is he may not be in prime condition until June. Yeah. If that's the case, it's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's going to provide opportunities for guys like Jordan Romano and Rafael Dolis.
You know what? There's no problem with having too many guys in the bullpen that you can count on. There are high leverage situations that come up that aren't the bottom of the ninth all the time.
100%. Right? 100%. And this is where I think, you know, a guy, and I think we're going to see it quite often with this starting rotation. I don't think there's a lot of guys in this rotation that are going to go much more than 5 or 6 innings. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see a lot of high leverage situations come up in the sixth, where maybe it's going to be wonderful to see a guy like Rafael Dolis, who could literally be closing for this team and did it last year, come in the sixth and be a shutdown guy. A Jordan Romano come in the seventh, you know? I think you're nailing it with just you can never have enough high leverage guys in your bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this bullpen's starting to shape up pretty nice. Like you look at it, you got Kirby Yates, Jordan Romano, Rafael Dolis, Chatwood in there. Mm-hmm. You know, like Chatwood could be a really integral part of this bullpen as well. Ryan Barucki, you know, as the big lefty in there, and he's got some extra gas this year. Like, you're seeing Barucki touch 96 almost every fastball, and you gotta love seeing that. David Phelps, you know, like I Liriano looks like he's gonna make this bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking this bullpen.
Yeah,
you know, and those are seven guys that are a lock, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, the seven we just named. Mm-hmm. And then it depends if they go with an eight or a nine man bullpen. I think they're gonna go with a nine man bullpen. Mm-hmm. To start this season, mm-hmm. which means a three-person bench,
mm-hmm.
which is why you're never going to see three catchers. It's mm-hmm. why they have exactly. to start Kirk in AAA mm-hmm. if they're not going to give them the position,
mm-hmm.
because you can't have three. You can't have three bench guys and one, you know, two of them be catchers. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
So the other guys that are up in the air for those bullpen spots, I mean, depending on what they're doing with the starting rotation in AAA, so Merriweather is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Even Nate Pearson we could see in the bullpen, depending on how his rehab mm-hmm. goes here. He's starting to pitch now again.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he's on a mound yet, but he's throwing on flat ground. Thomas Hatch, Trent Thornton, Anthony Kay,
mm-hmm.
even Tim Mayza, who was a big part of the Jays bullpen in 2019, underwent Tommy John surgery. He's looking great mm-hmm. this spring. So there's a lot of question marks there. Be interesting to see how the last spot or two round up. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing, too, is I truly do believe if this starting rotation exceeds expectations, that we will see them go to an eight-man bullpen,
mm-hmm.
just have that fourth guy on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that they're looking to do. Mm-hmm. But I think they start the season with a nine-man bullpen.
Right. Well, the nice thing with the short bench is we've got so much positional versatility. Really allows for that deeper bullpen.
It does really allow for that, absolutely.
So.
Man, and Alek Manoah, I know Blue Jays fans are losing their mind over this kid right now.
Great performance yesterday, undeniable.
Oh,
I mean, as much as I crap on spring training statistics,
yeah.
I mean, it was exciting to watch.
Was exciting to watch, and dude, seven strikeouts in a row. He struck out seven Yankees mm-hmm. in a row. He has struck out eight of the nine last batters he's faced.
Mm-hmm.
Nine of the last 13. Like, the kid is lighting it up right now, and what's been so impressive about Manoah, dude, is not just his fastball. His secondary stuff looks great. His mm-hmm. off-speed stuff is hitting the corners. He's pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's any, and it's funny because we talked about this with Austin Martin and Jordan Groshans last mm-hmm. episode. There is no need to rush these kids, and I think we've got to put Alek Manoah into that category.
For sure. A lot of people I've seen on Twitter and social media have been saying, well, when Nate Pearson comes back, he can pitch three, and then Manoah can come in and pitch three, and then we go to the bullpen for the rest of the game.
Not how they're going to do
it. No way. I mean, yeah. It sounds cool, but it's not happening.
No, it's not happening, and I think what they're going to do is, like, the truth with Manoah is that the last time he pitched was high A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was at the alternate site last year, mm-hmm. which is great experience. And we've talked to several of the guys who were at the alternate site, and they raved about it,
mm-hmm.
right? The guys like Joey Murray and Jordan Groshans, who are just like, I truly believe that I have developed more than a regular season. Mm-hmm. And that's very possible the same thing happened with Manoah. Mm-hmm. However, to not have that experience at AAA, it is a really dicey game to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is the thing, is I want to see Manoah go down to AAA, and I want to see him force the Blue Jays' hand.
Mm-hmm. Like Kirk is with his bat right now.
Like Kirk is with his bat. This is the thing that Jays fans, and it's going to frustrate him. It's going to frustrate all of us, because I don't even think Manoah is going to be in the top two or three called up when there's an injury or mm-hmm. something like that. But if he lights AAA on fire, continues to pitch in April and May like he has pitched in spring training, I think it is very likely that we see Alek Manoah this year. I think it's very likely we see him by June or July if yeah. there's an injury.
Like, you're right.
But I would like to see him struggle at AAA and see how he comes out of it. Mm-hmm. I would like to see him go through a game or two where maybe he can't locate his fastball and he's got to rely on another pitch mm-hmm. or rely on some crafty mm-hmm. pitching to kind of get through an outing.
Totally.
So experience-wise, I think that's very important for Manoah to get. I don't think there's any reason to rush him, to rush Simeon Woods Richardson. Mm-hmm. There just isn't.
No. Absolutely not.
Richardson Woods. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Should we get into what's going on in the rest of baseball here?
If we have to, might as well.
Yeah, if we have to, we might as well. There are, we're going to go over. So the minor leagues are going, how do I?
Experimental rule changes.
Yes. Experimental rule changes. We're going to get into that into a second. So Major League Baseball is trying some rules out in the minor leagues, and we'll go through all of those in a second here. Mm-hmm. I did want to bring up Anthony Gose before we do that. So some of you Blue Jays fans out there might remember Anthony from his time in the Blue Jays system, right? The Jays traded Brett Wallace for Anthony Gose back in 2011. Some of you might remember that Wallace was one of the prospects that they got in the Roy Halladay trade. Anthony Gose was a top 10 prospect in the Blue Jays system for years because he had speed like crazy speed, you know? And it's funny how often the Jays run into this where they have a guy, you know, Anthony Gose was center fielder, great defensively, incredible speed. Looked a lot like Dalton Pompey, same sort of profile. Looked a lot like Anthony Elford, same profile, right? Just incredible defensive guys who have blinding speed but could never put the bat together. Anthony Gose wound up in 2016 going from center field to pitcher. He started to become a pitcher because he had an incredible arm.
Right.
Looks like he is going to get a spot in this Indians bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
He's 31 years old. What a comeback.
Just a cool story.
It's such a cool story. And this kid throws, you can't even say kid. This man throws 100 miles an hour. He's finally started to locate his pitches. Mm-hmm. And the Indians are very excited about this. They figure he has back end of the rotation or back end of the bullpen written all over him. Mm-hmm. I wish nothing but the best for this guy. Like, it is so cool to see somebody that was pretty much throwing on the scrap heap. Someone who was, like, written off by almost everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, if it happens, and it looks like it's going to, pretty cool.
Very cool story. Be interesting to follow him all season long.
Absolutely. All right, my friend, let's get into these rule changes.
Okay, so rule changes at all levels of the minor leagues. Basically, they're trying out one wrinkle at all different levels, right?
At all different levels. So that's high A, low A,
double
AAA,
yeah.
Double A. Yeah.
So let's start with Triple A.
Okay.
Basically, the rule change is bigger bases. So they're going from 15 inches by 15 inches to 18 inches by 18 inches.
Which is interesting because this does mean that the bases are going to be 6 inches closer together.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to encourage more stolen bases. And as we go through these rule changes, you're going to see that that's an aspect that they're trying to encourage throughout all of these changes.
It's a common thread for sure.
There's a few things about the way these rules are being presented that I didn't like. Okay. Number one, this press release that they put out, basically, Manfred spun it like, we're listening to the fans. These are just things the fans want. Like, I want to meet the fan that was like, I want bigger bases.
Do you remember a few years ago, I guess probably like a decade or so ago now, in the NHL when they were experimenting with weird hockey nets?
Yes.
They were like, let's do big hockey nets. Let's do hockey nets with like curved posts.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think it's going to wind up the same way. I think they're just going to go back to the way it was on this particular rule. And I don't know. It's going to be the thing with making the bases bigger is whenever baseball makes a rule change, they never see what the consequences of that are going to be, right? Like all of a sudden the Tampa Bay Rays will fucking come up with some way of making this rule just work for them and nobody else.
Right, right. They'll make all their players wear bigger cleats and it'll.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. So we'll see what happens here. I'm curious to see what the bigger bases mean. It could definitely encourage more base stealing, especially if you think about all the replays that they go, and 6 inches is a lot, man.
Right. Well, my initial reaction to this was, oh, the bases are going to be slightly closer together, was kind of the caption that I had read. And then I'm like, well, 6 inches is like nothing. Right. And like it is. I mean, we're talking about bang bang plays.
Yeah.
Right. So like 6 inches can be the difference between an out and not. I think we've talked to like Michael Krause from the Canadian national team talking about why we don't see stolen bases. Tyson Gillies from the national team as well kind of relayed the same idea, is that it's not worth the injury risk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Guys like Mike Trout could steal 40 bases a season if they wanted to.
Yeah. Right?
But it's not worth spraying thumb and missing 2 weeks.
And this is another thing that they kind of presented this bigger base idea as, is that a safety precaution gives a little bit more room for the fielder on the base,
and
leaves a little bit more of the base open.
I buy that more than I buy, oh, well, it's closer and they can, you know, maybe go for it a little more. I think if they say, well, you know, less likely to get injured, maybe they just go for it more. Never mind the, well, it's closer, so maybe I'll go for it more. I'm not buying that. But the injury prevention... Yeah. I'm in on that. So hopefully, I mean, anything that is in favor of player health, I'm all on board with. So
yeah, me too.
Double A. This is probably the sexiest rule to talk about. Defensive positioning restrictions. So basically they're coming up with ideas to try and ban the shift. So for starters in Double A this year, basically, the rule is all infielders have to have their cleats in the dirt of the infield.
So there's no moving your third baseman over to
right
shallow right field.
Yeah.
Exactly. Personally, I hate this.
Why?
I don't hate it because I'm all for the shift.
Okay.
I the shift is annoying as all get out.
Okay.
And if you're listening to this and you want to see an example, go to our Discord. I just put a photo up there of last year, the Houston Astros shift against Joey Gallo, big lefty with the Texas Rangers, right? Power bat.
Right.
Always hits it to right field.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at this shift, they literally have nobody on the left-hand side of the field. I mean, nobody. The closest they've got is their left fielder playing deep left center field. Yeah. And it annoys me to no end that guys just haven't solved this problem by constantly laying down a bunt whenever they give it to you, or just even a swinging, just push the ball past the pitcher. I know, listen, I'm well aware that there's more skill to bunting than I'm making it sound like it, but practice it then. Okay. Like, this problem would have solved itself if guys were constantly, when they were given the other side of the field, just took it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're absolutely right. This doesn't need to be legislated. This needs to be just addressed by the hitters. And I mean, you're right. There's more to bunting than just laying one down, right? It is harder than you would think, but
it's a skill.
I think where it becomes hard is not just in making contact. Where it becomes hard is there's a real asset when you got a runner on second and you're trying to advance them to third. And you've got to, you know, hit it in the right spot at the right distance. You know, if you hit it too hard, it's out and the runner doesn't advance. If you hit it too soft, the catcher gets it. You know, like there is some real finesse.
Absolutely.
Bunting in that situation, right? Even a sacrifice bunt down the first baseline, anything like that, right?
But in this scenario,
that's not what we're talking about. Exactly. This is just make contact anywhere over there and you're safe.
Like, I almost want to put it up on the screen here. Like, I can't express to you how frustrating it is to look at the picture that I'm talking about and realizing that he hit into an out. Like, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the whole side... Like, the whole... There's nobody!
Yeah, it's absurd. It's really absurd.
I like that they're trying it in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, I mean, I'm just glad that this isn't a scenario like last year where they're like, all right, we're doing runners on second base, which I don't even mind that much in the extra innings, especially being that they're going to go with regular rules in the playoffs. That's fine. Whatever.
One additional thing with the double A rule change there is that it's not official yet, but by mid-season, they are discussing that in addition to four infielders in the dirt, they may go with the extra step and say you got to have two infielders on each side of second base.
Which at that point, you're pretty much saying these are where your players have to play. Yeah. Like, what are we going to do now? Put X's where they stand?
Yeah.
Like, at what point, do you just like let them play?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why I'm so against this one. Like, I when the Tampa Bay Rays started doing this, when Joe Maddon started shifting, I hated it. I was like, what the hell? Talking, this is 13 years ago, man.
I know. It's crazy.
13 years ago, they started shifting guys, and no one has solved this problem by coming up with a way to put the ball in play on the side of the field where guys aren't. I don't know.
So let me, Francisco Lindor had a nice little quote about the shift the other day. So this is his, I don't know if it's a tweet or what, this is source Sports Illustrated, so a Sports Illustrated interview, but here's the quote. The shift has got to be cut down. Let me do me. Let me make the crazy play. Let me be like, okay, he's going to pull the ball. I can't be on that side of the base. So as the pitch goes, I run over to the other side of the base. Pow! And I make the play. We can't market the shift. We can't market strikeouts.
True.
He wants the highlights, right? He wants the
crazy range dive
for the, you know, hard liner up the middle, whatever. And
I mean, every Jays fan out there will remember Robbie Alomar just going the other way towards the shortstop, making an incredible pick, jumping in the air while spinning and making a throw to first base, which you never see anymore. You never see those acrobatic defensive plays because guys are just where dudes hit the ball all the time because every stat shows you where they normally hit it. Mm-hmm. So I do see that side of it. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here?
Single A.
Okay. So what are they trying there?
High A, step-off rule. So this is for pickoff attempts. Basically forcing pitchers to fully step off the rubber before attempting a pickoff. Commonly seen with a left-handed pitcher where he lifts his leg, you know, as if he's going to pitch home and then drops the foot down towards first base and makes the pickoff move. So now they're saying even a left-handed pitcher can't do that, has to step off the rubber before he makes his move to first.
And it's a balk if he doesn't.
Correct. So nobody knows what a balk is, but yes.
Yeah.
Again, this is just, I believe, in an effort to encourage base stealing.
Base stealing. Right? Yeah. That's 100% what it is. I don't mind that.
No, I don't either.
It's fine.
Low A, this is for all of low A, limiting pickoff attempts. So, basically, they get two pickoff attempts. On the third pickoff attempt, it's either a balk or an out. So, if you want to pick him off for a third time, you better be confident you're going to get him.
Right.
And if you don't, he gets second for free.
I don't know how I feel about that. I know what they're doing. They're trying to speed the game up, right? Like, this is a time thing. Mm-hmm. They don't wish one of those scenarios where the pitcher throws to first five times.
Exactly.
But how often does that happen? How often is the guy at first base so fast that they are that concerned where they're throwing there four or five times? Rarely.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you see it more in playoff baseball. Where
absolutely
everybody's just kind of gripping the bat a little bit tighter and I don't know. I mean, I don't hate it, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
No, that's the thing is I'm not going to sit here and complain about it.
You know what? It's the kind of rule though, like you said, the Rays are going to find a way to manipulate it. They're going to be encouraging their guys, hey, when you get to first, just take a little bit extra lead, right? And be ready.
Get those two pickoff attempts. Yeah.
And then we'll take the balk. You know, like,
yeah,
they're going to manipulate it as, like, just take a 10-foot lead and be ready to dive back into first.
Yeah. So, they'll start practicing it. Yeah. This is what gets me upset, is that the Rays will practice the fundamentals of how they play their game until every single guy knows it inside and out and can do it blindfolded. Yeah. And yet, you can't teach a guy to friggin' hit a ball where the guys aren't. Like, I know.
All right. So, going down to the low A West League, 22nd pitch clock.
So this is where the pitch clock comes into effect. Okay. And then what are they trying? Robot umps, right, is the other one?
Robot umps in the low A Southeast League. Yeah, so on automatic, right. Basically, detection for balls and strikes.
So they're still going to have the guy, they're still going to have the umpire behind the plate,
yes.
You know, for close calls at home plate, stuff like that, but it's just going to be a robot that is going to...
No. The human umpire behind the plate will call outs at home plate.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Okay. Sorry, that's what I mean. Yeah.
He won't make any decisions on strikes or balls, though.
No.
He'll have an earpiece where the robot will say, that was a ball, and then he will puppet it, and that's it.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Me too.
I hate everything about that.
Yeah, me too. It just doesn't feel like baseball, but... They're giving it a try. They figure it'll speed. Again, this is all about speeding the game up. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to eliminate the freakouts of the umpire and the manager getting in each other's face and all that sort of thing. Oh, yeah,
all the entertaining part of the game.
Let's eliminate it, the most fun part of the games.
I don't know. No fan's ever bored when a manager gets tossed out of a game. I don't know.
Honestly, dude, I tried... Like, I read all these rules, and I'm like, I got to be open-minded about this. I don't want to be the old man who's constantly like, baseball shouldn't change.
Yeah.
But on almost all of these rules, that's how I feel.
You hate all of them?
Like, I don't hate all of them. You know, I'm indifferent about half of them. The one I really don't like is the shift. And I just – it really is more about legislating the rules than it is –
Yeah.
That I love the shift. I really don't like the shift, but it just seems like this should have been a problem that baseball solved without needing to put rules in place, but they didn't.
You know,
so,
I mean, it's,
here we are.
It is absurd. It's like I've played in a couple slow pitch tournaments where they have a home run rule where, you know, each team can only have X amount of home runs and the rest have to be balls in play. You know, like you get two home runs and then...
Yeah.
The third home run is an out, basically, right?
Yeah.
And it's just the idea is to prevent those teams that are stacked with, like, actual athletes.
Yeah.
You know, give the beer leaguers a chance kind of thing. But we don't need to see that in the MLB. We don't need to say, well,
no,
you guys already have two home runs this inning, so if you put it over the park again, that's an out. Like,
yeah, I don't know. For sure. All right, my man, before we throw to Nick Allgaier, we got to talk Trevor Bauer. I do this almost every episode. I can't help myself. So Trevor Bauer is doing Trevor Bauer things again.
Yeah.
During the Dodgers spring training game against the Mariners the other day, Trevor Bauer pitched with one eye closed again. Now, he did this against the Red Sox last week. We talked about it on last week's episode about him doing that and the pirate memes and how much hate he was getting.
Right.
But this time he did it against the Mariners and he hit the batter. Now, this is the thing, okay? Like, everyone's all upset about this. He hit him with a split change. Like, the ball looped into his bat. The batter, like, the batter just stood there and, like, watched it hit him.
Yeah.
Trevor Bauer would never do that when the game is on the line. Trevor Bauer would never do it in a situation where it mattered. Mm-hmm. But he can't help himself, man. It's so arrogant and over the top. He is leaning into this bad guy role so much. He might as well be playing Razor Ramon from wrestling back in the day.
What a great reference.
All right, he's the bad guy. Like, he's just one bad decision away from start flicking toothpicks. I don't even understand why people are getting so worked up about this. Like, at this point, honestly, Trevor Bauer is the Howard Stern of baseball, right? Yeah. We're like, he's got a big fan base, but you know who's pushing this man to the front of entertainment, to the front of baseball entertainment? It's the haters.
Yeah.
It's the people who are constantly retweeting everything he does that are constantly seeing stuff like him pitching with one eye and making a huge deal about it. How dare he? What could he do? You know, here's the thing. Trevor Bauer is a shit disturber.
Yeah,
he has been all along. Mm-hmm. This is the role he has chosen to play, and it actually got him a lot of money. You mm-hmm. think he would have got $45 million for next year mm-hmm. if he was just a nice
Cy Young winner?
Yeah.
I mean, we got a lot of money, but not that much.
He wouldn't have got that much. I truly do believe that he upped his value, and there may be people out there that disagree with that, and that's fine. But, I mean, I get a kick out of it because I love shit disturbing. Mm-hmm. I think it's hilarious.
Look at Joe Kelly, right?
Like a Joe Kelly, like he literally, like Bauer's just, he's hitting a button.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this annoys you? This annoys you? I'll just keep doing it then. If this annoys you, you know, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. Like, this is Trevor Bauer. He's Cartman.
Nice South Park reference.
I don't know. I just get such a kick out of all the haters for him. It's just like, my God, he's a caricature at this point. He's like...
That Razor Ramon reference, though. I watched a documentary on Amazon Prime recently. The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I don't know if you remember Jake the Snake from WWF back in the day. Basically, it's about his fall from grace and struggles with drug and alcohol addiction and basically coming back up and redemption. It's a redemption tale, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie?
I haven't.
Okay. It's 10 out of 10 I've recommend. Seen... Even if you're not a big wrestling fan, it's a great just human interest story. But he ends up going to Diamond Dallas Page to live with him. And Diamond Dallas Page has this DDP yoga. It's like, you know, for old broken down men to whatever, right? Anyways, about halfway through the movie, they basically reach out to Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, and are like, hey, come join us at this like makeshift rehab center that Diamond Dallas Page has set up.
Right.
And they go to pick him up in the airport, and he's in a wheelchair, and he's so gray and overweight. It was just like shocking to see Razor Ramon as like an old broken man. And it's just an eye opener to like what these guys have put their bodies through.
Yeah.
And especially the old days of wrestling, like the road schedule and just putting on show after show, night after night.
The drugs, the steroids,
just a brutal show. And like, it is not a puff piece. It is not a fluffy, feel-good kind of documentary. Like, it's dark.
Yeah.
But man, it's good. So, anyways, that's enough of a tangent for me. Should we throw it to Nick?
Yeah, let's do it. Nick Allgaier, out of Missouri, Toronto Blue Jays left-handed pitcher. We're not sure exactly where he's going to wind up, probably AA, but he had some really great stuff to say. Just a fun dude to talk to. Enjoy, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Hey, you know what? I got one last thing.
Lay it on us.
This is a little bonus point. For all you guys that are super horny about the significance of spring training stats, Bo Bichette is hitting like 120 right now. So I guess if stats matter in spring training, then we got to send him down to AAA to start the season, right?
There you go.
All right. That's my old man gripe of the day. All right. Nick Allgaier.
Runner goes, trying to steal third, and that one is belted to left center field, and that baby's gone.
Hi there. I'm Nick Allgaier with the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're listening to The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Give me like 20 seconds. I have terrible Wi-Fi here, and I'm going to try to get on my hotspot instead of the Wi-Fi.
Sounds good.
Sure. Thank you. All right. Incredibly excited to be joined by left-handed pitcher of the Toronto Blue Jays organization, Nick Allgaier. Welcome to the walk-off, bud. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. You got that playoff beard in full bloom in Feb there. Well done.
We had to shave in college and high school, and I really haven't shaved ever since I got out of college.
now that the rules are do what you want, you're going for it.
Yeah, for now, at least the two and a half years I've had it.
Well, first off, my man, big congrats on your first big league camp. That's very cool, dude.
Yeah, it's been a fun experience so far, and thank you.
Absolutely. So let's start with this, okay? For the listeners who might not recognize your name, you were in High A Dunedin at the end of 2019, and you were always kind of a guy that was known for above average control, messing up a hitter's timing, pandemic hits, right? No minor leagues, and yet your stock really has risen up the Jays' pitching ranks. You added velo to your fastball. The reports are saying that there are tangible changes in your stuff in the last year. What did you do over the minor league shutdown to kind of put yourself in a position where you're at right now to be a big league camp? In a very tough year developmentally, you made a lot of progress.
Yeah, always has been one of my favorite parts of the game is training and kind of away from the game, as you can say. And I basically had over a year, or right at a year and a half because of the previous offseason, to basically just do training. And then I did training all of 2019's offseason and then into 2020 at Premier Pitching and Performance in St. Louis. They were a huge help. And then when we got sent home from spring training, we were kind of in a holding pattern for a little bit. And then I started doing some more of getting into off-season training, as we saw we probably weren't going to go back. And then threw some innings to some hitters and tried to simulate some games and threw close to 90 innings at home. But I mean,
wow,
it's always definitely different than what you would like see in an actual year. But we had probably 10 or 15 hitters around the St. Louis area that would come and hit off all the minor league pitchers that we had training. So it was good. It was fun.
It must have been pretty exciting to kind of see that sort of development in a year that maybe some guys didn't make the progress that you made.
Yeah, you never know about that kind of stuff. You pretty much got to worry about what you're doing and what I can do to get better myself. I saw it as a time to train. And like I said, that's part of the fun for me is training and doing velocity training, throwing different weighted balls and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you just kind of touched on it there. I'm curious about, like, the increase in velocity you had was fairly substantial. You know, you added 4 to 5 miles an hour to your fastball. You were averaging 89-ish. You're touching 95 now. So how do you go about adding that sort of velocity? Was it mechanics or is it just, like, hitting the gym? Like, how was your process about that?
It's kind of everything. Definitely working out and getting stronger and quicker, faster, getting more explosive, those kind of, after you put on the strength. And I put on a little bit of weight from the season I was in Dunedin and then trying to transfer that over and get more explosive with it. And then, yeah, I have always done some weighted ball, plyo ball throwing since my sophomore year of college. And then the one thing I thought was the most help was I did a long toss velocity program that was playing long toss 4 times a week and some kind of a differential blend with a 6 ounce ball and a 4 ounce ball and a 5 ounce ball, obviously, but those kind of differential weights, 1 ounce heavier than baseball, 1 ounce lighter than baseball, playing long toss with some of that. Yeah, go ahead.
For those who don't know what long toss is, you're kind of just explain it here, I guess, for the listener.
Yeah. So long, like a basic game of catch is goes out to probably 60 to 90 feet, I would say. And then long toss is keep backing it up, try and increase how far you can throw with some air under the ball. I would go to my max distance and try to throw it. Like, obviously, at the end, I would be getting to throw it as far as I could, which therefore is going to increase how hard you have to throw it.
Right.
So
that's what you're doing. You're training your muscle kind of thing.
Yeah, just trying to throw it as far and as hard as I can on those certain days.
So this really impressed me, buddy. And it's been mentioned by a few of your former managers. It was mentioned several times within the system that you're one of the hardest workers in the Blue Jays organization, which is no small feat. And you did kind of touch on that, just that you really enjoy the training side of the game. What keeps you focused to keep putting in the sort of work?
It's just your vision of where you want to get to and what you want to do in the game of baseball. So I haven't accomplished all that I want to accomplish in the game of baseball. So you keep pushing forward. And, one thing I like to use is I don't like to talk about goals as much as more of like having a system in place, because I think when you have goals, like there's like an ending point there. And when you have a system of how you want to go about your business every day, then you can keep pushing along and just keep going through checkoffs as opposed to goals. And there's never really an end when you have a system in place to go about your business every day. And that's kind of how I look at it.
That's a good mindset. That's a really good mindset, actually. And I know one thing that about the MLB, and whether it's fair or not, is that the higher ranked prospects, the guys drafted in those first three rounds, they get a little bit more leeway, right? A little bit more rope. And I mean this with the utmost respect. Obviously, you're no bonus baby, right? Like, you were drafted in the 12th round in 2018, and yet you have found a way to get noticed. So we talked about your work ethic, but what has your mental approach been, knowing that you have maybe not quite as many chances as, say, a guy taken in the second round? Or do you even take that into account and just try and continue to focus on yourself?
No, I really didn't, or even free agents. So I don't think it's gonna help you in any way to look at it like that and focus on negative thoughts like that. I kind of just, like I said, just try to do it.
Like, don't bring up the negative side of this, bud. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So you're a Missouri boy, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And you played a little hockey.
Born and raised in St. Louis.
Born and raised in St. Louis. You a Blues fan?
Oh yeah, I love them. I am, yes.
Yeah, 2019.
Been a lot of Blues games in my life.
Yeah, 2019 must have been pretty exciting for you, eh, to finally watch them hoist the cup.
Yeah, that was awesome. We actually had our last game or second to last game of the first half in Dunedin, that when they won game seven. I watched the end of it on the bus.
Were the other guys laughing at you a bit? Were you like the only guy who was into it?
No, so there was actually a couple of guys. We had one of our coaches, Jake, he worked with Dunedin, and he's going to be in AAA this year. He's from Boston, so he was on the other side of it. But then Jake, we also had John Harris. John Harris is in the org, and he was doing a rehab stint down in Dunedin. So me and him were both on the Blue side watching it.
Nice. He's a Missouri boy too, fun. Is he? Yeah, that's great, man.
Yeah, he's from St. Louis.
What position? What position did you play when you were playing hockey?
I was a forward.
And you played in high school, correct? You were actually even sort of considering going junior.
I wanted to. I don't know that I was going to be good enough. I could have gone and played somewhere, but it wouldn't have been very high level. But yeah, I started playing when I was 3, and I played all the way through high school.
Oh, you're gonna endear yourself to the Canadians' hearts. That's great.
Yeah, I'm a big hockey fan, and it's one of my favorite sports.
That's awesome, man. Did you play any other sports growing up? Do you enjoy playing any other things?
I also played football in high school, and then growing up I played a little bit of basketball, but I was not very good at basketball. And then I started picking up some golf when my first job was a caddy, and I started that when I was in like sixth grade. And then I started playing golf around like freshman year of high school, and I've started to play that a lot more now that I'm a PO.
Yeah, man. So golf must be pretty prevalent in that clubhouse. I know we literally talked to Adam Kloffenstein as soon as we're done with you here, and he was supposed to be on the show on Tuesday, and his golf game ran long. And I know we also talked to CJ Van Eyck, and golf, he was like, golf's my number one. He's like, if I could be a pro golfer, I would. So do guys in the clubhouse, are you guys out playing together or what?
Yeah, we try to get out with each other. I've played a couple times since November. St. Louis hasn't had the best weather, but try to get a little bit more down here.
Yeah, I can imagine. So it must be pretty exciting for you to be at big league camp and kind of be able to pick the brain of so many pitchers. Like, are guys talking shop all the time? What is kind of the dynamic in that clubhouse right now? If you've got a guy on your team, are they pretty much an open book? Like, anything you want to know, any info that they can share, they do. Do guys keep anything close to the vest?
No, most people are available and willing to share. It's a little different this year as opposed to, I'm assuming, what years previous have been because of COVID. So they kind of have us spread out all over the complex. And
right.
There's only 26 guys in the big league clubhouse. And then we have another 20 in the clubhouse that I'm in. And I think there's four locker rooms and we're all kind of spread out in there. But it's cool to talk shop with some of the coaches, and we have some meetings. But most of the big leaguers that I've talked to are very open with sharing anything that you'd want to ask them. And it's been a real good experience so far.
How has your pitching approach changed over the years?
A little bit just in the past year is I'm trying to attack a little bit more. You know, when you were throwing 88 to 90, as I was in Dunedin and in college, hitters are a little bit more in swing mode trying to attack you. A little uptick in velocity and some of my other stuff has started to play better. It allows me to throw in the zone more and not have to pick edges as much and kind of attack the zone and have more good things happen for me.
Do you feel more confident being able to put a little bit more zip on that fastball? Like, does it make a difference? Sure. Does it make a difference mentally? It does, eh?
Yeah, for sure. Especially like I wasn't one that would get a whole bunch of swing and misses on my fastball. And then when you try to throw one hard and you get a swing and miss, it gives you a little extra boost of confidence. It's the same as what a hitter would have if they hit a home run. You know, next plate right. appearance, they're going to have a little more swagger there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like watching? Because what have you kind of topped out at? I know I was reading 95. Have you hit 96, 97? Like, what's that feeling when you hit a number like that, even though you're not supposed to dwell on that and it's about mixing your pitches and all that, right? Like, what's that feeling when you watch like 97 pop up?
Yeah. You want to throw it again and you want to throw it harder. It depends where you're at. I haven't thrown in any actual games since like a little uptick just because of COVID. But when you're at home throwing bullpens or you're throwing to hitters on a live BP and you turn around, you see 95, you're like, okay, let's try to throw this one harder. It usually doesn't go harder, but it's still fun, especially when you have other guys you're competing with, trying to throw harder than them too.
How is the competition at spring training? Like, is everyone pretty competitive? Like, do you wind up in like little games all over the clubhouse? Or I know obviously with COVID, everyone's trying to distance and stuff, but is that prevalent?
Yeah, there's definitely some competition. I'm a big cards player, so I'm always trying to get somebody playing cards in the clubhouse. But
yeah, you play poker or what do you play?
No, we usually play gin.
Jen, nice. All right. I'm curious, Nick, is there a pitcher in the organization, and we can even go broader than that, even the league, that you look at and you're like, this guy has similar weapons to me. I like what he's using and how he's going about his game. And then you try and model yourself off of them or take pieces of their game. Are there pitchers out there that you pay especially close attention to?
Yeah, I don't know that I would have one specifically because for me at least, you try to change your stuff every once in a while. With throwing harder, I've dropped a little bit in arm slot just naturally. But there's definitely pitchers that you watch, especially with me being at Big League Camp for the first time and Blue Jays just getting Steven Matz. You know, he's a taller lefty that throws pretty hard. You kind of watch those type of people. I kind of just try to soak in everything. And it's more to me about learning how they pitch and what their mindset is, like how they read the hitters, how they go off what pitches they just threw, as opposed to trying to model my game after them. Cause
right.
I think everyone's game is going to be different and you're going to throw with what you have. And most of it is just learning how to pitch, learning how to read hitters. And then the biggest part is putting it where you want. So That's more what I watch. I'm trying to watch how they pitch, how they attack hitters, and say, hey, I kind of have similar stuff to them, so I'm going to watch this guy a little more closely as opposed to a sidearm right-hander.
Yeah, right. Of course. Are there guys, like, have you had a moment where you're watching a guy and kind of picked up on the way he's thinking or the way he's approaching a hitter and been like a eureka moment for yourself?
Left-hander in Dunedin. We had Rocky come in. We have started down there, and I think he threw two innings, and I don't think a single person put a ball in play. I'm like, gosh, I need to go back and study this for the next time I go out and throw against him. And I did throw against him one more time, and I actually did pretty well. But yeah, there's definitely times when if somebody with similar stuff is throwing against a team that you're going to throw against, they may not have the same stuff, but most of the time the lineups are going to be similar, and the managers from the other teams are going to put a left-handed lineup in.
Sorry, Nick, just a second. Adam, can you mute your mic there, bud, please? No, sorry, we're just – your conversation's happening here. There you go. Thank you. All right, Nick. Sorry, buddy. Go ahead.
you want to tell the whole thing again?
No. You can just kind of pick up where you were there.
Oh yeah. I think watching pitchers with similar stuff and style to you and how they attack the hitters just kind of gets their mindset, and you can see what worked. And then talking to the catchers after the game and talking to them how they attacked is helpful.
How much do you lean on your catcher?
A pretty decent amount. I think obviously it takes time to get comfortable with your catcher. But once you kind of get the feeling after a couple games of, hey, they know what you want to throw. They know how you want to work. They know how fast you want to work. They know how you want to attack hitters. Then it's a pretty good back and forth of let's go about it, and we know exactly what we're going to do together.
Right. Have you worked with a catcher that you just had overly good chemistry with, where you were just like, man, this guy knows how to call a game?
Yeah, I haven't had anybody I've thrown to in the Blue Jays organization that hasn't been a really good fit. If I had to pick one that stood out, I threw a 5-inning sim game I think it was last spring training before we got sent home, and it was the first time I'd ever played catch or thrown to Reese McGuire. And I don't think I shook him off one time in 5 innings, and we had a lot of success. And it was probably the most immediate chemistry I've had with a catcher, but I haven't had any catchers that I don't have chemistry with after we get going for a couple starts and everything.
Just that lefty connection, eh?
Yeah, I guess. It was pretty fun.
So, Nick, you're actually our third Vancouver Canadian, or former Vancouver Canadian, that we've talked to in the last couple months here, Joey Murray and fellow Missouri boy Will Robertson, the other, and both raved about the city and the fans and just how it really felt like their first pro experience. Do you have any stories or experiences that kind of stood out to you when you played in Vancouver?
I don't really have any stories, but I had a great time, and I had a great host family, the Gustafsons, up there, and I had a fantastic time, and I thought that was the first time that I ever been up in the Northwest. But it's a beautiful part of the country, and both Canada and the United States up there. I enjoyed it a lot.
Was that your first time in Canada?
Yeah, it was.
It was? Did you know much about Canada before you went to Vancouver? Like, did you know what to expect?
I had a roommate in college for 2 out of my 4 years that was from Brooklyn, Ontario. So that was about the extent of
right. So he was already filling my knowledge in about the poutine and all that.
Yeah, I did enjoy the poutine. I had that a couple times. I liked that. And
I love it.
I just knew their hockey craze, so
yeah,
I was already looking forward to it.
Of all the milestones that you have kind of accomplished throughout your career, do you have, if you had to rank three of them, like what were three achievements you've kind of accomplished that you just kind of were like, wow, I can't believe I'm here right now. Do you have three you could list? You should have given me a heads up on this one, bud.
Getting engaged recently is probably number one.
Oh, congrats, man. That's great. when did you get engaged?
In December.
Do you, it's so funny because I'm engaged as well. And my fiance always gives me shit if I don't know if you've done this yet, where you call her your wife or maybe your girlfriend and don't use that fiance word. And then she's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I have slipped up a couple of times and said girlfriend. She's like, we're engaged now.
It's fiance. Nick. Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. That's great, man. And good job mentioning getting engaged first in this list.
Yeah, and then probably my second one would have been going to Iowa, getting a scholarship offer from going to Iowa. That's where my dad went. He played football up there too, so I kind of – that was kind of a special spot for me. I've been going up there since I was probably 5 years old, going to football games, and that was a pretty cool accomplishment that I liked. And then obviously getting drafted, I didn't really have a ton of aspirations going into college about playing pro ball. I always, growing up, you wanted to play professional baseball, and I wasn't the best at baseball. Yeah. And kind of started getting into the training at P3 in St. Louis, and finally started to realize that, hey, things could happen, get drafted and play some professional baseball. And it's been an awesome experience ever since.
What were those moments right before you, like what kind of signaled to you that you were like, I can do this. I can go pro. Maybe I could make a run at this.
Just kind of seeing all your other teammates, like the teammates that get drafted, kind of looking at them and then some of the success that you have playing college baseball and in the Big Ten, which obviously isn't as big of a powerhouse as like the SEC, but there's still some very, very solid baseball. And just playing against some of those guys, like, okay, yeah, like I belong here. And it's kind of the same thing I'm doing right now, is at my first big league camp, just trying to realize and put in your head that you belong here for just be yourself. Can you hear me? I lost your.
There we go. There you're back. Yeah. No, all good. I'm really curious, man, about the mood in the clubhouse this spring. I mean, obviously there's some excitement up and down the ranks. What's it like being in that atmosphere, and how have the major leaguers been treating you and kind of all the other major leaguer or minor leaguers in the system? Is it like one big happy family? Are you getting razzed a bit more, or like, how does the dynamic there work?
No, it actually has been extremely friendly. It's a little bit different than I guessed. Just, I also think it's because of COVID, but there's a lot of group work and smaller group works to keep people separated. And so they put a couple big leaguers with a couple minor leaguers and have like your own group of say 5 to 8 people. And I got to know those guys pretty well, and they've been very welcoming and accepting of all the minor leaguers. And I've had no bad experiences so far. And I think it would be the same if we were all together.
That's great, man. That's really cool to hear. With spring training games starting literally Sunday, I know obviously scheduling and stuff is still up in the air. Do you know what day you'll throw an inning? Do you know when you actually get an actual inning in?
They put up a schedule of like backups and who's throwing in the game. I'm pretty sure I'm slotted to throw in game on Wednesday the 3rd.
Wednesday the 3rd. Awesome. Are you excited? Are you nervous? Like, do you get nervous for stuff like this, or do you, is ball ball?
you definitely have some nerves. I got super nervous the one game I pitched in the Big Ten Championship my sophomore year against Ohio State, and that was the most nervous that I had ever been in any sporting event. And I kind of changed the mindset and done – we do a lot of mental performance stuff. Try to work on that and breathing mechanisms to calm nerves. But, yeah, there's definitely going to be nerves there and for sure. But it's not going to be out of the realm. I have nerves – every game that I throw, honestly.
You do get nervous every game still, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
That's great, man. I love that. It's funny. Like I'm a professional stand-up comic, or I was when I could still tour. And it's really funny to me because I have friends who, you know, have literally been on stage 2,000 times, 3,000 times, but still get nervous, like they're going to puke before every single performance. And I just love, and it's so funny because they're a wreck beforehand, and then afterwards, it's like they just want a battle, right? It's like, all right, I did it. I can still do it.
For sure. I know that. Yeah, I know the feeling. It's not the easiest to cope with, but you got to – you try to turn it around and say it's good energy. It's even though it's nervous energy, this is what you want. There's some people that don't get nervous anymore and they wish they could, and they wish they had those butterflies in their stomach. So
absolutely. So in the game, and I mean, this has been a big aspect of the game forever, but I mean, it's become more and more analytically driven, so it's even paid more attention to the lefty-righty splits. How much time do you spend thinking about that? Obviously, left-handed pitchers are a huge commodity in the game these days if they can pitch to right-handed hitters, right? Like, that's the only time you're going to see a lefty starter is if they can pitch to righties. How do you work on that, and how do you approach righty in comparison to lefty? I know everybody is guy to guy, but just in general.
Yeah, I think for me, if I face a right-hander, I have, availability of all my pitches, fastball, cutter, curveball, changeup. And when I'm facing a lefty, I would say it's kind of 3.5. Like, I would take sometimes the left
on
left
changeup. What's the pitch you're cutting?
I would say half of a changeup. It's going to depend on guy by guy.
Right.
When you can throw each left-hander is going to be different of whether they're a guy you can throw a changeup to, and I'll know that going into the game. Hey, probably stay away from this guy on a changeup, as opposed to, hey, this is someone that's a little bit more of a big free swinger. Hey, you can attack them with all four of them if you so see.
Yeah. So if you just could pick the scenario that gives you the biggest rush on the mound, what would that be? Is it a strikeout? Is it a ground ball double play? What is it that makes you, when you accomplish it on the mound, just you can't help but fist pump?
It'd probably be a strikeout. Yeah,
it is a strikeout, eh?
Yeah. I'm always in for, I would say, a swinging strikeout. I'm more like to see your stuff get whiffed at.
Yeah, rather than paint the corner and just kind of get them watching, eh?
Yeah, that's not bad either, though. So,
Nick, thank you so much for joining us, man. I do have some listener questions here for you. You got another 5 minutes or so for us?
For sure.
Awesome. Right on. So Jamie in Kamloops, BC. So that's just 4 hours east of Vancouver. She says, hey, Nick, congrats on being one of the non-roster invitees this year. How surprised were you to get that call?
I don't know if the right word is surprised. Obviously, like, you're not counting on getting an invite, but you kind of talk back and forth between the coaches in the off season, and they try to give you as much of a heads up as you can. But it's definitely something I was grateful for. And you could say a little bit surprised, but it's something that I was working for and something that I was trying to get. So it was more of a exciting thing.
You were pretty excited, eh?
Yeah.
Did you do anything to celebrate? Go for supper with the fiance or anything like that?
No, I don't think.
You're like, no. Just started prepping for spring training. Yeah. All right. Kristen in Edmonton, so that's in Alberta, just above Montana. She writes in and says, "Hey Nick, do you?" Well, of course you know where Edmonton is. You're a hockey fan. What am I doing? Hey Nick, do you have any superstitions or weird routines you do on pitching days?
I don't consider it weird, but I have a pretty detailed warm-up routine that's minute-based that I start about an hour and a half before.
You have it down to minute to minute.
Yeah, minute blocks. I wouldn't say it's minute to minute, but about every 5 or 10 minutes I have it blocked off. And then I try to change gloves if I'm not doing too hot with one. I had a red glove I used to play catch, and I used it one time in the All-Star game in 2019 and just got lit up, and it's not going to see the field again. I haven't thrown with it.
How do you decide which game you're starting, which glove you're starting the game with? The hot hand?
No, it's more which one feels the best when I'm playing catch. Honestly.
Okay, so it's not the previous performance, but if it's an in-game thing, you could be like, this glove sucks.
Well, I'll use the same glove if, like, I'm doing well from start to start. Like, I'll use that same glove no matter what. But once I change, like, it's more based on which glove I've broken the best, because I wouldn't say I'm the best at breaking in gloves, but every once in a while I'll get one that I like and use that one.
So this next question is from Devin in Vancouver. It's funny, you kind of already answered this question. He says, "Hey Nick, I saw you pitch when you were with the Canadians in Vancouver. Congrats on big league camp. Did you have any poutine while you were in Vancouver?" Yes, you did.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. Football game in Ames, Iowa. They had a poutine stand in the football stadium.
Oh, awesome.
But I'm always in for poutine. I like it a lot.
That's great, man. Honestly, Nick, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, man. It means a lot, and we really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. I'm anxious to see if I'm going to get roasted for my bad Wi-Fi.
Honestly, all the best of luck with the rest of spring training. We would love to chat with you again once you kind of figure out where you're landing, if you've got some time a few months down the road or whatever, if that's all right with you, check in on you.
For sure. I'll be a reoccurring guest.
Awesome. Right on, Nick. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks for listening to The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Join us for a new episode next Monday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Jeez, a cracker. Chose to pitch to him.